Please, please, flag. Ready? Again.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, thank you. Do we have any changes to our agenda? There are none. All right. Anybody have any conflict of interest disclosures to do? Being none, we'll move. What was that?
I have one on 4B. Excuse me, I'm going to recuse myself from 4B because out of abundance of caution, I have property close to there.
Person.
All right, make a note of that. Did you make a note of that? Okay, cool.
Thank
All right, thank you for that. Let's move on to item number two, public comments on agenda items. We also have some written public comments. Did you want to mention those?
Chair, we did receive a comment from Lori Salazar Vasquez over at U.S. Fish and Wildlife. You did receive a printout on that. We also received an email comment. I'm sorry, let me go back to that. It was on item 5D, update on legislative efforts for the Coachella Valley Conservation Commission. And then we received another emailed public comment from Michael Harrington regarding the bighorn sheep. And so you have an emailed public comment on that. And we also received a comment from Donald Miller on item 5B. And I know that he is here present and wants to provide a comment.
All right, thank you. You should have all of those in front of you this morning. And I will call. I'm trying to read. Is that Ring?
Districts. Ring, oh, the Ranger program.
Oh, Ranger program.
Michael
I'm sorry,
Harrington.
Michael Harrington. I'm sorry. Mr. Harrington, if you'd please come to the podium, you'll have 3 minutes. Why don't you start?
Good morning. I'm Michael Harrington from Ranch Mirage. So I'll keep it brief. I don't need 3 minutes, but I really like what I read, the staff report on the Ranger program. I think it was very inclusive, comprehensive, hit a lot of points on a very difficult subject. The only thing, if I have a suggestion that I didn't see, and maybe it's covered by staff if it's not in that report, but I didn't see a lot on biological efforts or measuring, tracking wildlife, nesting, the biological resources. It seemed heavy on code enforcement regarding, dumping and nuisance. And then it on the other end, it had the urban cores, which traditionally they provide, the muscle and boots on the ground. I don't know here, but usually they're building trails, that kind of thing. They're not necessarily trained up in reporting to a scientist. I don't know where I'm on my time, but I could tell you I did that when I was a kid, and it was a great opportunity. I got to go out with scientists and had a lot of fun, a big adventure. But I was taught how it's very specific what they want, how you're observing. And I didn't see that training or that role there. And that's the primary mission. So I believe of this commission that was kind of weak or missing. And it seemed to emphasize, well, we got to make up for what the sheriff really can't quite do. And that didn't quite make sense to me. I mean, I kind of get it, but I mean, the sheriff has a duty and they get paid a lot of money and they're always asking for more money. And I appreciate they have a difficult job, but we're not going to really be the sheriff. I don't, your commission, right? I don't know. So I wanted to point that out. Seemed too heavy in that area. Other than that, see, we got the cleanups and so forth. Yeah, that's a lot to do. Structure, like wildlife structure, what about these guzzlers? I did mention that already. I won't repeat it. Fences, fence lines, checking and all that. Oh, I wanted to say, and I'll let it go at this. Colleges, I mean, people from UCLA, COD, UC San Diego, I'm sure there's a lot of students that would love to come here and get involved in that and look at all they would have a chance to learn. There's really very diverse. Okay, there's a diverse ecosystem here. Their students would love it. It would help you too and help you fulfill your mission. All right, thank you.
Thank you so much. Your comments are well taken. Our clock isn't working.
Mr. Chair, it is. It's just upside down.
Oh, I was reading it wrong. Mr. Harrington, thank you for your comments, Mr. Harrington. We very rarely get them here, and I'm just going to say it's a developing program, and the gentleman at the far end of your row there is the one in charge of it. So I would encourage you to reach out to him and have further discussions with that. All right. Also,
how much we contract for biologists and research and monitoring and maintenance.
Mr. Harrington, we do have an extensive biological monitoring program. It's not this much of the subject today, but it's oftentimes the subject of many of our agendas. So there are lots of biologists, and we're monitoring a lot of species out there.
I just disagree, but I don't like. I'm out of time, but I disagree with the results. Here, you have a great opportunity to beef it up.
All right. Thank you. Also, we have a very large crowd there. We're very interested. I wanted to welcome the executive director for the Coachella Valley Mosquito Vector Control Board. Jeremy Whitty is over there, takes care of our mosquitoes and our bugs here in town. So thanks for joining us this morning. I have one other public comment from Donald Ziegler. Mr. Ziegler, if you'd please come to the podium, you'll have 3 minutes. The clock is right side up now, so we're good to go.
That's it. Good morning. My name is Donald Ziegler and I live in Palm Desert. The following comments are in regard to item 5B on your agenda. The agenda item includes a report outlining the status of several state initiatives of concern to the CVCC. I draw attention to the following section of the report discussing the availability of Proposition 4 funds in the fiscal year 26-27 that the CVCC can apply for. I quote, funding from the climate bond, as it is called, represents an opportunity for the CVC and other local agencies to address conservation, sustainability, and climate-related issues. The report then lists the bond categories and corresponding amounts that can be applied for, and one of them is $450 million for extreme heat mitigation. The report notes, for fiscal year 26-27, the governor proposes allocating $2.1 billion in the second year of a multi-year investment plan. A key category from the climate fund that is relevant to the Coachella Valley is extreme heat mitigation, which the budget proposes $231 million across various programs pertinent to the region, including $55.3 million for Community Resilience Center. CBAG works with several entities in the Coachella Valley planning for the impacts of global warming and the strain that it puts on the electrical grids of Edison and IID. We've come to rely on those grids for reliable delivery of life-sustaining air conditioning during our hot summer months. I believe this puts residents of the valley at extreme risk when those grids collapse for an extended period of time during the summer, which they inevitably will. The state funding available from Prop 4 appears to me to be an opportunity for an appropriate CVAG agency, maybe CVCC, to apply for part of that $55.3 million for Community Resilience Center, whatever that term means, in the extreme heat mitigation funding available from the Climate Board Fund. I believe we have an urgent need for large cooling centers powered by microgrids and a longer-term need to transition away from grid-based power to decentralized microgrid-based power generation and storage throughout the valley. The CVCC should actively pursue this funding and prioritize using those funds to address the urgent need for 24/7 cooling centers powered by microgrids that will protect thousands of lives in the event of an earthquake or another event that disables the utility grids for several days. Thank you.
Thank you very much for taking time and speaking with us this morning. There are other public comments. All right, seeing none, we'll move on to item number 3, chair and director announcements. I have nothing. Does anybody have anything they want to bring up? All right.
I do have a quick reminder for everybody in the room. The microphones are in the ceiling, so if you whisper to your colleague or seat partner, it might get picked up to a broader audience. And we do have the room, it does have video as well in the corners. So be careful of somebody looking over your shoulder. Thanks again to CVWD for providing the room. And two quick updates, one on the burrowing owl, which is not on the agenda, but just to let you know, we continue to work with our wildlife partner agencies to address a number of concerns. You might remember we received a not very welcome letter from the wildlife agencies indicating we were out of compliance. We are not. The burrowing owl is doing great, and KD is leading a team of attorneys, biologists, and partners to address those comments. Secondly, we've gotten reports on a really important initiative here over the last couple months, and that is cleaning up some of our lands in the Desert Hot Springs area. And we received a $500,000 grant from Cal Recycle. We've spent about $300,000, and it's been worth every penny. I want to show you a little video that I asked Will and our team to make, documenting the good work that's been done out there. We might use this video to find some more money to get more work done out in our conservation areas and open space areas in the Coachella Valley. So we've asked a couple of your colleagues that live in the area to be our star performers in this video. Don't be too critical. We didn't have any makeup. Low budget, no makeup.
At least it wasn't an iPhone.
We're chatty.
One second. This worked great before you all walked in.
Yeah, that never failed.
That's good luck.
If the video doesn't work, we'll ask our two performers just to get out of the pantomime or something.
This is conservation. This is meant to be wild. This is to protect critters. This is to protect wildlife. Having an illegal encampment, all of the trash, the waste, everything that goes along with that completely decimates the entire goal of the conservation plan.
Almost leaves you speechless, you know, when you see the before and after. This is a filter. Everything we stand on in this entire valley is a filter. And our drinking water is 100% from below our feet. So everything that is not properly disposed of affects the quality of our water, which will affect generations if we don't stop it now. I think it's really important that as CDCC moves forward, that we start finding ways for people to use it in
responsibly, yes.
With the protection of it, so that they learn the precious need to participate in its protection.
That's our next step at CDCC and all of the other agencies. Is we, you know, conserve the land. Now we got to figure out what to do with it.
So I'm hoping that this will elevate the pride in our community a little bit. I'm hoping that it will definitely bring awareness.
We all have to work together on this to bring it to fruition.
I can't. Thank CVAG and all of its partners and teams. I can't thank the commission members from all the different cities in the valley enough for agreeing to handle these here first.
That's perfect. That's the way you are. You don't need makeup.
Is there a possibility of adding the time simulation of that massive cleanup that happened that looked at all of the vehicles there and it literally goes to nothing? That would be very impactful as you're showing the tons of removal because you have those photos.
Yeah.
We'd taken a lot of aerial and photos and we'll see what we can piece together. This project is about 65% done. The next portion of it is to put out flock cameras and prevent this from happening again on these lands. Thank you, Will, and the whole team.
Yeah.
And thank you to our star performers for helping us out. You'll hear more about this project in the coming months.
We're really pleased with the results of that out there. And it's just one step. And we were at SCAG last week, and we had an interesting discussion down there on using CBDG grant or CDBG grants for cleaning up brownfield sites, and these can be considered brownfield sites. So there's all kinds of stuff. Let's go to Dana, and then we'll go to Jan.
When you redo it, I'd like to get a copy or show it at a council meeting. I don't know how to do that technologically, but if you could somehow get it to us, I'd like to present it to my council.
I email it to Chris, and Chris makes it happen.
I've got Dan.
I just want to tell everybody that Gary was so excited. I am here to tell you about that CDBG. He talked about it all the way home. He was looking forward to getting the grants. Do we work with the homelessness committee when we're going through there? Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
We do. Ernesto?
Do we have a hotline to report illegal activity throughout the desert for properties that are owned by the CDBG?
We don't have a specific call number for our properties, but we do encourage people to call law enforcement.
Because I often drive throughout the Coachella Valley, and I do see encampments. I don't know if they're in land owned by the Conservancy, but it would be helpful if there were signs made up and posted that said, if you see any illegal activity, call this number.
Thank you.
Right. Okay. Note, too, that Ms. Garner has joined us from Palm Springs. Thanks for coming in. Anything else on that?
No.
All right. Let's move on to our consent calendar. The minutes, there's three items on there. Mr. Bianco has recused himself from item B, but for the rest of them, does anybody have any comments? Want to pull anything?
Approval. Indio seconds.
You have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Just any opposed?
I abstain from item A.
And one abstention there, and also from Mr. Bianco. Okay. Nothing held over from our consent calendar. Let's move on to our action items this morning, and we'll start with our favorite thing to do here, acquire more land, acquisition of two parcels, Thousand Palms Conservation Area. Ms. Rosas, welcome.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair and Commissioners. I think most of you know me, but for those that don't, my name is Diana Rosas. I'm the Associate Director of the Coachella Valley Mountains Conservancy, but today I have the privilege to serve as CDCC's Land Acquisition Manager. For your consideration are two parcels totaling 10 acres in the Thousand Palms Conservation Area. The area in green on the map represent the already conserved parcels owned by CVCC. As a reminder, the Thousand Palms Conservation Area encompasses approximately 25,900 acres with a conservation target of 8,040 acres of contiguous habitat, wildlife linkages, and sand transport corridors. To date, we have conserved 6,171 acres in this conservation area, and it remains one of the highest priority acquisition areas under the plan. The parcels are located south of Desert Park Drive and east of Sierra del Sol Road, within sections 6 and 8 in unincorporated Riverside County. Both parcels contain a critical fluvial sand transport process area that is essential to the long-term viability of the Coachella Valley Fringe Toad Lizard Preserve. So why are these parcels important? Acquiring the two parcels will contribute to advancing the overall goals of the plan by protecting ecological processes that sustain multiple covered species, including the Coachella Valley round-tailed ground squirrel, Lacan's thrasher, and Palm Springs pocket mouse. From a management perspective, acquiring the parcels will also expand contiguous habitat in one of the most biologically important areas of the plan, thus allowing CVCC staff to better manage the area. The plan also requires CVCC to maintain acquisition funding available at all times for properties specifically in sections 7 and 8 of this conservation area. Funding must remain available until all vacant land has been acquired or developed consistent with the conservation objectives. One of the proposed properties does fall under Section 8, which made it a priority for acquisition. Historically, CVCC has prioritized this conservation area due to the potential for high development, which is still a concern today. We had the properties appraised in November and established fair market value. The sellers accepted contingent offers of $51,000 and $54,000 respectively, which is consistent with recent acquisitions in the area. Estimated closing and transaction costs total approximately $5,000 total for both properties. My team of acquisition managers worked with the sellers to ensure that the properties met the contingencies of the purchase and sale agreement, including a physical site inspection of the properties, confirming no hazardous conditions or dumping was on the property. You can see the pictures there. And we also confirmed that there was clear title to the property. So during our due diligence, we found no issues. This acquisition supports plan compliance, protects critical sand transport processes, protects critical sand transport processes, protects habitat supporting the fringe-toed lizard preserve, and provides open space connectivity. For those reasons, staff recommends approval of Resolution 2026-02 and authorization to proceed with the purchase and incorporation of these parcels into conservation in perpetuity. I am joined today by our Executive Director, and we're happy to answer any questions.
Welcome, Elizabeth. Thank you, Diana. Do we have any questions? Fills in two nice little checkerboard squares. Any public comments? All right. Seeing none and no questions from the commission, you have a motion from Indian Wells. A motion from Indian Wells. Do I have a second? Second from Riverside District 2. All right. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Motion passes. Thank you, Diana. Thank you, Elizabeth. Item number B, we have an update on our state legislative efforts. Tasha, welcome. We see you on video. But welcome to our humble abode.
Got the PowerPoint. Do I have a clicker up here too? Is it this?
Yeah.
And then do I just do this?
Yeah.
Oh, the arrows?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like I am challenged when it comes to technology. My partner makes fun of me. Good morning, Chair and members, staff. I'm really excited to be down here and be out of the Sacramento gloomy weather that we're having. I know we need the rain, but we have had fog for months, and now it's raining, so we need the rain, but I'm just glad to be in the sun.
Yeah. Well,
so today I'm going to give a presentation on our state legislative efforts on behalf of CBCC. I'm going to start with a little bit of a recap from 2025 and then move into, you know, what we've been doing and what we will continue to do into 2026. So I wanted to start with some good news. Last year, on behalf of CBCC, we ran a bill, AB 900, which was to look at the need across the state for long-term management and stewardship of protected lands. As many of you know, there is hardly any funding at the state level for this type of activity. We have lots of funding for acquisitions and restoration projects, but when it comes to long-term management and stewardship, there's really not much there. And so this bill sought to elevate the issue by telling the state that they needed to do an assessment of the needs across the state. And so what you see here is a mock-up of what we hope will happen during this year with the California Natural Resources Agency needs to do an assessment and put out a report in 2027. And then we're hoping to take that report and move towards a funding strategy going forward. So first show the need, then try to get the funding.
So the bill passed and was signed?
The bill passed, it was signed. And yeah, this was very much spearheaded by CBCC. When we first came to work with CBCC, they said, you know, this is the type of funding we need. And we're like, well, there's not much out there. So let's see if we can build a coalition and try to make something happen. So this is the first step. It's in you know, what we think will be a relatively long process to get there, but we're really hoping to make some strides.
Who carried the bill for us?
It was Assemblymember Pappen in the Bay Area.
Oh, in the Bay Area.
Yeah. She was the chair of, and is the chair of the Water Parks and Wildlife Committee. So her messaging was, it's not enough just to protect the land. We need to manage it in perpetuity. And organizations out there that are protecting the land can't afford to do it on their own. So, you know, folks like CVCC, the land trust community, others in this space. So we had a lot of help from the land trust community, the Nature Conservancy, and others to push this message. Another thing that we focused on last year quite a bit was the state budget. So as most of you know, we're in a big budget deficit last year, I think over $20 billion. And so there was cuts happening here and there. The one bright light was Proposition 4 had passed in November to provide $10 billion statewide for, you know, a whole slew of different types of climate-related activities. We were working with the legislature to just ensure that the funding rolled out as it should have through the state budget process. One of the messages as well was that we didn't want to see a bunch of earmarks of the funding for special projects. We wanted it to go to the programs to which, you know, the bond was attributing the funding. As you know, during the budget negotiations, a lot of times, you know, different legislators start to like see that money and want to take it for projects in their district. So we're pushing back against earmarking, pushing for getting funding out. What ended up happening is that the state legislature passed a balanced budget during the timeframe in which they were needed to pass their balanced budget, did not include Prop 4 appropriations within the budget. And so we found ourselves in the very last month of the legislative session having to push for the Prop 4 funding to get appropriated in what's called a budget bill junior. So something that happens at the end of the legislative session if they weren't able to get it done during the timeframe in which the balanced budget needed to happen. So we were definitely scrambling, CVCC and others reaching out to their legislators to try to get the funding out. And we were successful in getting a little bit over $3 billion appropriated. But there was a catch. And I'll get back to that catch after I go through a little bit more of the 2025 recap. So one of the things that was at the front of all of the legislators' minds was trying to reauthorize cap and trade, the policy, as well as the funding for cap and trade. And so we also got involved in the negotiations over how the funding, the revenues from cap and trade were going to be allocated. We saw it as an opportunity to really advocate for some conservation dollars to get investments from the cap and trade revenue. We were working on that simultaneous to working on the state budget appropriations for Prop 4. In the end, we were not successful in getting funding for natural and working lands in the bill that passed, but there is a pot of funding that's discretionary at the legislative level that should be there every year going forward, $1 billion, where, you know, the legislature can make determinations about how that $1 billion gets spent. We're hoping to make some progress and some headway in that discussion, but it's going to have to be a fight ongoing every year, we think, to try and push for more funding for natural resources, conservation, and things like that, perhaps some stewardship funding. But right now, with the deficit still in place, the funding from cap and trade is being put to different priorities within the state, such as high-speed rail, backfilling CAL FIRE's baseline budget, their operating budget, and a number of other things that just took priority over what we were trying to push for. Another thing that happened last year, good thing, does anyone recognize themselves up here? We started a legislative ad hoc committee so that we could meet periodically with a group of you to vet policy and priorities and get feedback and guidance and advice on directions to take within the policy platform. And so this started last year. I find these meetings to be very helpful and really appreciate all the input that we've gotten through having these meetings. So that was a cool thing to have happen. And I hope that we continue. And the final thing I'll mention from 2025 is with regard to the burrowing owl, how things have like started to, you know, get a little bit complicated down here. We, on behalf of CBCC, reached out to Megan Hurdle, who is a deputy secretary at the Natural Resources Agency for Biodiversity. And we started working with her and her Sacramento colleagues at Department of Fish and Wildlife to create a relationship there so that if there is any problems in the future, that we could go directly to her and get her help and guidance. And in the meantime, she has changed positions and now she's actually the director of the Department of Fish and Wildlife. She is no longer at CNRA. She starts her job at the end of the month, and I've worked with her for over 20 years, so have a very well-established relationship with her. And this is something she is knowledgeable about and willing to help us with in any way that we need help from Sacramento on this particular topic.
Sounds positive.
Yeah, hopeful. Very positive. So that's kind of a big recap. There was a lot of other things I could have put in, but I don't have all day I could spend with you to talk about everything that happened last year. But now I'm going to move on to the 2026 preview. As everyone knows, Newsom is on his way out. Yes. And at this point, we don't really know who's the front runner for the next governor. So it's still kind of very up in the air. We're not getting any indications that there's anyone, you know, in the lead. But what we are getting indications of, people will start jumping ship. People, you know, anyone that's an appointee will start to look for other positions because their time is limited. So people in the governor's office, people at the Natural Resources Agency that were appointed, people at, you know, all of the various appointee positions, they'll all start to look for new jobs. And so, yeah, as you can imagine, our work is going to get a little bit complicated when some of those people start to leave. And as I mentioned, Chuck Bonham, longtime director at CDFW, has now moved on to be the director of the Nature Conservancy in California, with Megan Hurdle moving into the position as director, moving from CNRA to Fish and Wildlife. And that's an appointed position, so she could be a short timer there. We'll have to take advantage of her being there while she's there. We're not sure who will take her place once there's a new administration. Again, in meeting with those folks that are likely to jump ship, they are still saying that they're very focused on achieving the goals set out by this administration. So some of those different initiatives that were set by the governor and the Secretary for Natural Resources, the 30 by 30, cutting green tape, nature-based climate solutions, outdoors for all of these things are in the final months, trying to get to the finish line, trying to see how much that they can get done, while at the same time, the people heading these programs could leave at any time. So it's a little bit of an uncertain future. So that's what's happening at the agency level. At the legislative level, we've seen a change in leadership in the Senate. So Mike McGuire is out and Senator Monique Limon is in. She's from the Santa Barbara Ventura area. She was previously the chair of the Senate Water Parks and Senate Natural Resources and Water Committee. So we know that she's got a good track record on environmental issues, and we think she's going to be a strong leader. So we're looking forward to working with her going forward. But with Senate leadership changes, there are changes in the chairs of the various committees that we work with. So we've seen chairs change at the Natural Resources and Water Committee. Josh Becker is from San Francisco. He's more of like a tech kind of energy guy, not as deeply ingrained in, you know, some of the natural resources and water issues. We might have to do a little education with him. And then again with Eloise Gomez-Reyes, she's more on the EJ side than the conservation side. So we'll need to see how she is as budget sub two chair. And then appropriations change. And one of the bigger changes is John Laird as Senate Budget Committee chair. He is a great natural resources and environmental champion. So that should be good for the work that CBCC does. And hopefully he'll like help move Prop 4 and all of those things forward. We didn't see a change in the assembly, so not a bunch of changes on that side in terms of committee chairs or anything there. Still got the same speaker. One thing I wanted to mention, getting back to Prop 4, is that although we were able to get Prop 4 money appropriated last year, we ran into a hiccup with the fact that there was not an exemption in Prop 4 for the Administrative Procedures Act, which is regulatory requirements on programs putting forward guidelines. And now every natural resources bond prior to Prop 4 has had this exemption in it. So as you can imagine, the state agencies that run their programs got into a position where they didn't know what to do. They didn't know how to comply with APA because most of these departments are not regulatory in nature. They're just granting funds. And so what really came to pass is that the funding just stopped moving forward. It's sitting at a lot of agencies and not getting spent. And so early this year, AB 35 by Assemblymember Alvarez out of San Diego was introduced to apply an exemption from the APA to Prop 4. And this bill is supported by CBCC and probably every stakeholder that's waiting for Proposition 4 money to roll out. AB 35 got through the assembly with no problem, no votes. It's probably got about 40 or more co-authors signed on now, including Senator Padilla, Assemblymember Wallace. Lots of folks are signed on in support. It is a bipartisan effort to get the money moving. Just yesterday, we heard that the legislature might take a budget action for the appropriation of last year's money and apply the APA exemption to last year's Prop 4 allocations, meaning it would free up the $3 billion that was appropriated in the 25-26 budget. That won't take care of money in future budgets, so we're still going to need AB 35, but it would free up the money that was appropriated last year and get things moving at least. That being said, this year's budget is more on a balanced level. We're hearing $2 billion or so deficit. That number seems to change depending on the revenues that are coming in or not. And so we don't see like as much of a fight in terms of general fund cuts and things like that. But we are lucky that we still have Prop 4 to move out. And this year's budget proposes, the governor's budget proposes over $2 billion in additional Prop 4 with, you know, the $3 billion from last year. So that would be about half of the bond moving out in these 2 years. Another thing that we're seeing, in addition to the APA stuff to try and get the Prop 4 money moving, we're seeing a lot of discussion around wildlife corridors and connectivity and legislation that's needed in that space. So those are things that could pop up. We're also hearing about last year, there was a bunch of CEQA exemptions that happened. We're hearing that there could be some cleanup legislation to put stronger sidebars to protect open space and things like that. So we haven't seen anything in print. There was something that was in print at the very end of last year's legislative session that has now fallen by the wayside. So those discussions are still happening. In addition to that, I would be remiss if I didn't mention that there is a lot of discussion around data center siting and what that looks like. My partner Mark said it's going to be the year of the data centers legislation. There's been 4 bills introduced. There could possibly be 9 or 10 when all is said and done. The deadline for bill introductions is February 20th. So we're still waiting to see all of the bills that are going to roll out this session. Some are starting to trickle, but we'll know more after the 20th, and we'll get back to everybody with a report on the bills that come out in the space that we're working in here. So with that, I think
that's
my presentation. Do you have any questions?
Thank you so much. Wonderful work, especially last year on AB 900. You know, you heard me say it a million times. You're going to hear me say it a million times more. That is what we have to do moving forward, is figure out what we're going to do with all this land that we're buying. And we don't have the funds here, and we're going to have to rely on state funding. So that's the first step. It's going to take a long time, but, you know, some of us will still be around, I'm sure, when it finally does happen. So, Ben, you had a question.
And getting back to the owl, I think it's imperative for all of us to get updates rather than between meetings or something regarding that. It is good news what Mayor Evans said, but I have heard statements that were counter what was just said today. I know that I had a discussion with Elaine Holmes that we walked away from the last meeting feeling really accomplished, and then we get the bomb thrown on us, and so about how bad it is and how it's going to hurt more cities than others. It just hurts the whole valley, and I think it's imperative that we just get an updated news, because some of our legal counsels that are helping are not consistent from what I'm gathering. And so I don't know how that affects the rest of the communities, but it's non-productive. If we're all here united as one, then we're going to move as one, because it was a lot of hard work and investment done into it. I don't take it lightly. I don't think nobody else does either. So
we have found in La Quinta alignment, especially between CVWD and IID on this front, which is favorable. And of course, the discussion we had at the last meeting, we support the efforts going forward to stand our ground as a region.
Absolutely.
To justify our compliance and production and progress. So
that's the reason for going down this road, as
right.
We have been, and developing that record, developing that public documentation of the success of the CV multi-species habitat conservation plan and how it has worked. And if we're not experiencing the dip, which none of us have seen, but they are in other parts of the state, then we shouldn't have to pay the brunt of dealing with that. So I'm glad to see that. I know we've had all of our city councils have all been asked to sign with that, and so we're all working through that process. And I think we have a good plan moving forward.
We do it, and there's no doubt there is a disconnect. The disconnect isn't between our agencies. The disconnect is what's happening on the ground, which are plenty of burrowing owls, and what the wildlife agencies are telling us to do about burrowing owls. We've been working with all of the agencies, legal counsel. I think we're all on the same page. And yes, we'd be happy to provide more regular updates.
And again, it's I walked away feeling as being the new kid on the block, very accomplished of what everyone's work's been done.
Good.
I thought it was a slam dunk.
Oh,
and when,
oh, nothing.
You walked away with the right impression. A lot has been done. We've done wonderful work on this, and yet we're hearing something else from wildlife agencies.
Wildlife, yeah. Frank?
Do you have a map of where they live and the population, estimate population?
Yes, and we've spent much of the last few meetings on the subject, yeah, along with some pretty extensive reports from IID and from our own KD. We'd be happy to get that information to you from the last meeting.
Yeah.
So Anything else? Were you waving your hand, Jan?
Okay. No, we're just
discussing. No, I thought Jan had read it. Anything else? All right. Thank you very much. Thanks for coming down from Sacramento and enjoy the sunshine.
I know. I've got to get out there this afternoon.
All right. No action. That's just an information one. And now we'll move on to item number C. Will, those of us that are on CVMC, this is a rerun of what we saw on Monday, but I will tell you without giving away any plot twists, this is very, very, very impressive. And as somebody who's been working on this one for a long time, I think they knocked it out of the park. So with that set up, go, Will.
No pressure. Thank you, Chair. Good morning, Commissioners. I'm Will Steichen, Conservation Ranger Coordinator for CVCC, here today to provide you an update on the development of the Conservation Ranger Program with the ultimate goal of better managing and protecting conservation land throughout the Coachella Valley. There we go. Okay. So today I'm going to cover the progress we've made to date. The big topic is the different host agencies we've considered to ultimately house the program and then provide a recommendation for how we should move forward. When I first came on board, we immediately began wanting to understand the legal nuance that we had to navigate in developing a ranger program. So I worked closely with CVMC and Desert Recreation District attorneys on just identifying some foundational questions, things like what different authorities do different agencies have, what are the legal limitations we're going to face. From that, we drafted a conservation ranger ordinance that would eventually allow our rangers to issue administrative citations for things like illegal dumping, destruction of property, illegal recreation and OHV use, hunting on conservation land, scientific collection, and much more. We've also developed standard operating procedures for our patrols, enforcement and cleanups. And then we defined ranger training curriculum, which I'll get into a little bit later. And we've also worked on developing some interpretive tools. Of course, these are things like signage, but also a web application. As you saw in the video earlier, we had a big cleanup, and obviously this was an important project, but it also provided us an opportunity to really define what our procedures look like. So through this cleanup, as the video showed, we removed 260,000 pounds of debris, over 45 vehicles and RVs, 500 tires, and much more. We also had 9 active encampments, and we coordinated closely with a lot of different departments, social services, police, animal control, code of compliance, and so on. We issued 35-day notices and conducted outreach on a weekly basis during that notice period. So through that, we had zero law enforcement actions required during those evictions. And that really set the stage for how we want to do our work going forward, how we want to address encampments, cleanups, and all of our other challenges. Let's see. Actually, the last thing I want to say about the cleanups is I think it's really important to hit on that point because it underscores why rangers are important. We're spending $500,000 on cleaning up one area where with a ranger presence out there, we can be proactive, stop these from ever happening and save funds and protect the land. Moving on to interpretive signage on the left, here's a sign that we just put out outside of the Two Bunch Palms Elementary School. Rangers are not out there just for enforcement. And to Mr. Harrington's point, they're educators and they're ambassadors. So we've been developing these tools. The interpretive sign on the right, we'll work on developing plenty more of those. On the right side is just a tentative homepage for a web application that will break down the CVMS HCP in simple terms. This is gonna be a resource for rangers and the public. So rangers can get up to speed with what's important, the conservation areas, different species that live in those conservation areas, what sort of actions we're taking in that area. So this is something we're developing now and we will have available as rangers come on board internally for them as well as an external resource. this brings me to the big topic, which is ultimately where will this ranger program be housed? So in order for a ranger program to be effective, there's a couple key pieces. The agency needs to have the authority to write citations, so hire peace officers, swear them in so they can write citations. And those are administrative citations. You can think of them like parking tickets, not misdemeanors that have to go to the court system. The agency needs to be able to adopt an ordinance or rules that can be enforced on our lands. They need to be able to enter into land management contracts. And ideally, they have staffing capacity. So rangers have really unique training. And once they get trained up across the state, it's pretty typical that they get hired from other agencies and move on. So we really want to make sure we're considering how we address staffing challenges. So when we first started, the initial vision was that we would house this program either at Desert Recreation District or the Joint Powers Authority between Desert Recreation District and the Mountains Conservancy, which is the Coachella Valley Desert and Mountains Recreation and Conservation Authority. So we were considering those two. Those were really our first targets. We pretty quickly realized that the Joint Powers Authority didn't have quite all the authorities we needed, so we started focusing on Desert Recreation District. They meet all of those citation and ordinance adoption authorities that are required for a ranger program to be successful. We also, CVCC has a contract with the Recreation District to do some of our land management. They install fences and boulders and things like that. So we already have an existing relationship. There were a couple challenges that were presented over time. Desert Recreation District has never done enforcement. This is a new function for them. And they don't write citations currently, even though they technically can. So there were board concerns about, you know, the public perception of starting an enforcement team. There is limited redundancy. So if we start a program with 2, 3, or 4 rangers and one of them leaves, you know, this is our own in-house program. Filling that position could take quite some time. And then finally, they had a lot of competing initiatives. They've taken on a lot of work recently. They're doing the maintenance for CD Link. They're doing a lot of capital projects. So they have a lot on their plate. Back last fall, I presented to their board a potential idea of what this program could look like, housed there. And the concerns that I brought up here were concerns that their board shared. So with that, we decided let's take a step back and reconsider how we want to approach this and manage our land. So from there, we began looking at Riverside County Parks and Open Space District. So first off, they have the necessary authority that I mentioned, just like Desert Recreation District does. They can write citations, they can hire peace officers, so on and so forth. They can adopt ordinances. A big thing is they actually have 4 existing ranger programs. 2 of those programs are in open space, as well as an MSHCP program that they manage for the Western Riverside Regional Conservation Authority. So they already have experience in managing habitat conservation plans. They have countywide staffing infrastructure. So that redundancy that we're concerned about, they have dozens of rangers that if we lose a ranger, we can tap into temporarily as we begin hiring our own. The cleanup project that we've talked a lot about, that is something that the county does with their Santa Ana River Bottom unit, which is primarily focuses on encampments and dump sites. And that coordinates between many, many different county departments, housing workforce solutions, code compliance, animal control, so on and so forth. So the standard procedures that we've set in Desert Hot Springs, those are something that we feel we can expand into county region-wide through Riverside County Parks and Open Space. And then finally, we've been working very closely with the Santa Monica River or Santa Monica Mountains Conservation Authority. They were actually the people we initially were planning to mimic our internal program from. So I spent a few days with their ranger program. And basically from the top down, they all recommended to start by contracting our services. That gives us the opportunity to understand what's really needed out here. take 5 or 10 years of having a contracted ranger service to really pin down what your program needs to look like, and then reconsider doing an in-house program. So from there, what steps have we taken? Last fall, we met with the Chief of Parks as well as Natural Resource Manager for the county, and provided them just a proposal of essentially what we want this program to look like, and get their thoughts. We brought them out for a land tour and toured a significant portion of CVCC land, as well as covered a lot of the CVMS HCP and permittee land. We provided them with a packet that identifies our issue areas where we really want ranger patrols right away, and then our hopes to expand out later. They are currently working on a program scope and a cost estimate. We did actually on Tuesday get very tentative sense of what rangers will cost. So we're happy about that. And let's see, the next steps, really what we want to do going forward is bring an item back before the council or before the commission before the summer with what that contract looks like, what the numbers are. And our hope is to start with 2 rangers through the county that have the ability to enforce. At the same time, develop a ranger cadet program with the Urban Conservation Corps to develop a hiring pipeline so that we can get local talent that's trained up, that's gone through things like Cal Naturalist, and biological trainings, cultural trainings, so on and so forth, that have a stake in our local area. So those are the next steps. And with that, I'm happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Will. For those of you that have already seen this, you saw what I know. You see why I was excited about this, but then I get excited over weird things like this. But what is most impressive to me on this is the amount of work and how far we have moved on this in such a short time, because all of us are in government and we know this stuff takes years and years, and we're way ahead of where I thought we would be. So that's credit to the CVCC staff and to you, Will. You did hit the nail right on the head about gradually phasing it in. That gets back to our lobbyists back up there in Sacramento and the start of AB 900 from last year. And by the time we go through a 10-year process of getting that through the pipeline, maybe we'll have state funding to keep this thing going, because that's the other big concern that we have is the sustainability and the long-term funding of this. We've got to identify a source of that. And it all ties back into we're buying the land. Now we're figuring out what to do with it. It's going to take a while, but I think we're there. So, Will, kudos at least for me, and I'll open it up to the floor for anybody that has any comments or questions. Okay. Kathleen. Well,
Gary, I think you and I were both on the JPA when we started this. And so we've come a long way, and you've answered a lot of questions, because I think, you know, we kind of thought we could do it ourselves. We're kind of the self-help county in the state of California. So we always think we can do it ourselves. But I think often it's definitely a good thing to go where there is existing knowledge and have existing experience. So I really like the idea of going back to the County Parks Assessment District and trying to find a way to fit in there. I'd like us to think about some ways to make sure that, because some of our cities have conservation land in them, some of them do not. If we're going to require some kind of backup ordinance from the cities to allow for the enforcement within our city districts and in concert with our existing sheriff's department contracts. And I think you are going to have staffing challenges, but I'm always excited to see the combination of enforcement with education, or education with enforcement, however you want to term it. I think it's important. I think when you have vast areas of property that you need to protect, that's the only way you can do it. So I'm very impressed with what you've done, Will, in less than a year, actually, right? Less than a year.
No,
year and a half.
Year and a half. Oh God, I could get. I'm aging myself because time was
thank you.
Right.
Thank you.
I'm just very impressed, and those are kind of. I like the idea of contracting before we establish our own. I think I said that. So, and I like the idea of developing our own cadet program so that we have people who feed into the mm-hmm. system. So good work. Thanks.
Ben.
Well, I echo part of what Chris Patrick just mentioned. I just, in my 40-year career in dealing with enforcement and education, I think the model is perfect. I just strongly recommend it as you're going into this program, do quarterly reporting updates on how the progress of training, retention, everything that you mentioned. Usually we get so excited and things go along and a year later we're realizing, oh, we didn't know that. We could have curbed it. We could have done something to troubleshoot it. So that way the success and the support's there of all the hard work. The last one, I know that Riverside County Sheriff's Department constantly gets mentioned, which is great. They're a good agency in what they're doing. But we still have some municipalities that have their own public agencies. Mm-hmm. And every city has certain municipal enforcement actions that can be done. And there might be a collaboration of doing an MOU. So it does cross paths with the areas that the conservation has properties in those areas for enforcement. I know that administrative citations are great, but if there's no compliance, there's a lot of catch up from law enforcement. So you might reconsider misdemeanor violations because the body can do it. It does require a prosecutor, but there is a way. I know cities that have their code enforcement units that have that as the last option. But when you're issuing administrative citations, literally it is like, it's less than a warning ticket sometimes. You're hoping there's compliance, but if they say pound sand, it is pound sand. When law enforcement shows up, they're going to restart the whole process over again. I don't think because of your success, that'll happen. But there is going to be that one that's not going to follow the program. Even though you do extensive PR, the worst thing you could do is they have to start all over.
Yeah.
Also, dealing in if there's federal lands that are crossing, there is a, it took me 4 years to find this out. There is a section of the federal code that will adopt local ordinances to be enforced because they don't have enough staff. And it's not just BLM rangers or rangers across the nation. And so there is a tool there federally that will allow because they don't have enough. And that's managed by kind of like three property managers. The United States has cut up three ways and they're hard to find. So, but the local BLM office can assist and facilitate that. They will be important on the federal land relationship. So those are my comments.
We had a local BLM office that had people in it. It might help. Our nearest BLM folks are up.
Maybe just a couple of quick updates. And council member, I know you're relatively new here. Take all of your suggestions to heart, given your long background in law enforcement. And in fact, we are not shy about picking your brain. And we might just very well do that in more detail. We've actually, in the past, hired a certain police chief who was also mayor and also chair of CVAG named Stan Henry. And he's been on the clock off and on over the years to assist us.
Stan and I have a really long relationship.
Well, he's trouble, so that says a lot.
That's what he's talking about.
Yeah.
Right.
And
very positive one.
Yeah, and I think we do too, and I certainly do. And we do have an MOU with the City of Desert Hot Springs Police Department. Again, that may not have been new. That probably is news to you, but it's a longstanding relationship we have with that city that has a lot of conservation land within the city. And we're going to follow up with you. So thank you for those suggestions.
Yeah, and with the MOU has been working really well with RPD, so I think we're good there. Amber, you had something.
I just wanted to say thank you for the hard work and touching on what was just mentioned with the MOU. As I had mentioned when we last saw each other, a big concern I think all of us share is while we're waiting for that ranger program to keep up with the MOU. And I know you're making weekly stops, or you were when we last talked, but maybe some sort of scheduled drone observation where that is logged and maybe able to be presented as, you know, all the lands are clear and something like that to kind of create that scheduled accountability with the police department so that we can make sure we're on top of it while we wait for the rangers. That's just the biggest concern I have is we've spent and invested all this money and we've got to make sure it stays clear and we've got to make sure that we don't go backwards. works. So I just really appreciate your diligence and all the work that you've put into this entire thing. So thank you.
And Amber breaks up another good point, and I like the drone idea as well. Our PD out there has lots of drones they like to go play with. So reach out to them. And I think flying over periodically, we have another encampment that I know that we're working on right now, right next to one of your wells off of Pearson Boulevard. And they were doing, didn't you go out yesterday and do the eviction notices?
Yeah. So there's an encampment in the wash just south of Pearson Boulevard. And these are part of the standard operating procedures that we developed. There's kind of two different ways we approach encampments. One of them is if they're not in critical or unsafe conditions, we give them time, we offer services. If they're in an area that there is a human safe concern, you know, a safety concern like the wash, and we have rains coming this weekend, we want to get that person out of there pretty quickly. So we provided a notice on Tuesday, and we'll be going out there tomorrow to complete that.
One of the things that came out of the visit to the cleanup sites that Amber and I went on with you, we were looking at access to our conservation land. And so as a pilot project, you know, Will and I will be working on, there are some extended roads and non-used roads and social roads that I think with some gating and some boulders, they're not going to stop everybody, but they're going to stop the guy that can drive his motorhome deeper into conservation land where we can't see it, or we can only see it from a drone. So our next, one of our steps we're working on right now is identifying those locations. And I think long term, putting up a gate, giving the keys to the agencies that need to get there, are going to be a lot cheaper than spending $250,000 cleaning up a homeless camp. So this is an all big, long project, and we'll be dealing with this for years to come. So anybody else have anything for Will? Will, again, congrats on all the work you've done, and thank you. You've done a fantastic job. I'm so impressed with everything. Some information items. We're nothing we need to go through there, do we? And any public comments that were not given earlier? Nope. All right. Our next meeting will be April 9th. No meeting in March. So April 9th here in this very room. And we will see you all then. Thank you, everybody. We're adjourned. Thank you.